Right, hello and welcome to Masterclass 3. Shirley, I can see that you're here with me live. Can you let me know if you can hear me and see me okay? Is my video looking okay? Is my audio looking okay? Let me know in the comments so that I can dive in and be sure that everything's looking okay. All right, let me get up all my notes and everything. All right, beautiful. We are recording. Amazing. All right. I've got a hot water bottle on my lap because it's actually really cold in Sydney. I'm just keeping that next to me at different points in case I need it, just to keep myself nice and toasty. All righty. Let's see. All right. So today's class is about clearing your blocks and moving beyond fear. We're talking about fear primarily in today's class. And this class is a really beautiful flow on from last class, from Masterclass 2, where we were talking about sort of the mind, like the mindset blocks, the things going on within your own mind and your self-talk that might be blocking you. And then today we're looking more at how the energy of fear might be blocking you and holding you back. So the purpose of these first few classes is to be helping you clear out what might be holding you back and get your energy and your mindset and everything aligned, so that when we start to focus a little later on in the mastermind around practical things that will get you moving forward, you will be, one, not feeling as blocked and held back by all your stuff, and two, you'll have a range of tools to help you as things arise. So this inner work component at the start of our mastermind journey is really, really important. Shirley, I'm presuming you can hear me. I saw you do the little hand up thing, and I'm hoping that meant, yep, all good, Cotton, I can hear you. I hope that wasn't like a hand up, like, oh, I can't hear you. So just, yeah, if there's any issues with anything, please just type in the comments and let me know, just so that I know we are all good. Alrighty. So let me just find my little center. So this energy of fear, this is where I really want to open up today, is to talk about the energy of fear, because fear is something we all feel, we all experience and work through. It arises for all of us. Now, you may, I think we can always look at ourselves and think we experience fear more than other people, or we find it harder to work through our fear is so much worse or so much bigger. We, like every single human on the planet, experiences fear. And I actually think fear is an incredibly natural thing too for us to experience. And this is where I want to open up, because my intention for helping people work through fear is not to try to eliminate your fear, is not to try to make fear go away and never exist for you, is not to in any way judge your fear or judge when you go into a state of fear as a weakness, as a negative thing, as a step back. None of that. I want us to see fear as a very just natural energy that as a human we experience and work and need to work through. And the reason being is, fear is always serving to protect us in some way. So think about when you feel fear, what happens in your body? Usually you're contracting, aren't you? So when a feeling of fear, and I'll talk in a minute a bit more around, the various ways that fear energy can play out, because it's got a lot of different expressions and flavors, as I call it. But you think about that general feeling of fear. When you feel fear about something, it's a contractive energy. So what it does is it causes you to shut down, pull in your energy, stop. And we talk about fear as having, creating almost like a fight or flight response in the body. So you'll either freeze, want to shut down, pull away, and retract, or you want to run, like you'll be like, get me out of here. Like you actually have like an adrenaline type response and you feel unsafe. What's coming? Got some little bit of noise coming through. No dramas. Beautiful Shirley saying I need a how to use Zoom lesson. Lighting's good and sound on point. Thank you, Shirley. I really appreciate you being here learning how to use this platform with me. Thank you for tuning in. It's beautiful to have you here, and I think what you're doing is perfect. So the purpose of this fear energy that presents is to protect us. And we need to understand fear gets activated when a part of us doesn't feel safe in some way, perceives a threat, perceives that we could lose something that's of value to us, perceives that something bad's going to happen. And that fear energy arises within us, and then it causes us to contract, pull away from the threat, the danger, run away, retreat, and do the opposite of what is triggering the fear. Do something to keep us safe. So I guess just coming into this class, I want to start with just reframing fear and reframing your relationship to fear, so that when fear presents, we no longer feel like there's something wrong with me, or I'm weak, or the fact that I'm feeling fear means I can't move forward and I can't have what I want, or I should really just follow that fear and let it overtake me. Instead, we want to, like we began talking about last class, this witnessing kind of work. Let me witness and notice this fear and actually get curious to it and ask, interesting, what's this about for me? Why is this arising? What part of me is not feeling safe in this moment? What is the perceived threat? You know, is it threat losing love, losing money, losing acceptance, being judged, being rejected, failing? There's some type of threat that's created that feeling. Our fear is an opportunity for us to learn more about ourselves, to lean in and get curious and be like, oh, something's getting triggered in me here. And when my fear arises, it's a chance for me to learn how to love and support myself even more now. Because what most of us, our relationship to fear most of the time is that we just give it all our power. You know, I think I spoke about this last time. We just give our fear all our power, and we get so overtaken by that visceral reaction that it really holds us back. Versus, oh, wow, there's been fear triggered in me. Cool, what do I need? Do I need some reassurance, some self-care, some support, some self-love work? Do I need a hug? Do I need to be told that I'm valuable and amazing? Do I need to do some gratitude work? What do I need in this moment to help soothe that fear and help me move beyond it? Is sort of one of the first things I want to look at here. What else was I going to say about this? The other thing is, and we can create a whole new meaning around what fear means. So when fear gets activated, the way I like to see it is you are on the verge of breaking outside your comfort zone in some way. Give me one sec. Let me just get this a little bit brighter. So you know, we all know what a comfort zone is, right? Like it's that energetic space or that space within us physically or whatever it is in our lives or ourselves where we feel very comfortable. We feel safe. We feel secure. We feel like we're all good. All our needs are going to be met. Nothing's going wrong. And when you go to do something new, something you haven't done before, something that feels like it's going to expand you and cause you to grow, you're going to have to get outside the comfort zone into the growth zone, you know, and stretch yourself a little bit, and it's going to activate fear. And so that fear to me is just a sign you're on your edge. You're on the edge of your comfort zone. You're about to break into new territory. You're about to do something you haven't done before. You're about to discover a new part of yourself. You're about to expand. So let's start to see fear as actually a really positive, beautiful indicator that you're on the verge of growth and expansion, that you're about to define yourself in a new way, that you're about to discover something that you're capable of that maybe you didn't even realize, that you're about to take a leap and follow your heart and be courageous. So we... this is, first of all, just this change in our perspective and our relationship to fear. And I hope those things that I've shared are useful little perspective shifts for you, because that's really helped me. I used to feel so paralyzed by fear and feel like such a fraud because I would experience fear and feel so like, oh, my fear means that I can't have what I want and I can't do what I want, which isn't the truth. And when I began to just see it as this beautiful indicator that I was growing and expanding and that I was about to discover, you know, something brand new about myself, it became an empowering thing. It became a beautiful indicator. And it also became a chance for me to listen more deeply to myself and what I was feeling and what I was needing, and then learn how to love and support myself through my fear. Sorry, the lighting's looking really on. Just give me a sec. Maybe I'll turn this off. Sorry, I'm just trying to bring a little bit, more light into the room. I know it doesn't really bother anyone else, but it bothers me when the light's clicking in and out. It's all based on the sun and what the sun decides to do on any given day that I am recording a video. All right, so let's as well talk about now the various expressions of fear, because fear, what is my computer doing? Fear isn't just, you know, that sort of visceral fear you get when you feel nervous about something. I actually feel the energy of fear can express itself in a lot of different ways. It expresses itself through feeling not good enough. It expresses itself through self-doubt, through comparison, through perfectionism, through control, through worrying what other people think about us, through playing small. That fear, anything that causes you to contract, to feel limited, to feel stuck, to feel held back, is being driven by the energy of fear. Anything that allows you to feel expansive, inspired, empowered, like you can move forward, like you're capable of anything, is being inspired by the energy of love. So I'm going to go into now, and this is a big part of what our class is going to be about, the specific ways that fear energy might be playing out for you. And we're going to talk about how to work through the various expressions of fear. So let me just quickly look through my workbook and just make sure I'm on track. Yeah, let's talk about comparison, because this is one of the ones that plays out for people so much. It's a fear-driven quality. It's a fear-driven pattern. And comparison is a pattern that for a lot of us keeps us stuck and prevents us really showing up for what we're capable of and what we're destined to do and our true potential, our full potential. Oh, where's my notes? I was just reading through just to see where I'm at with that. Okay. One of the first things about comparison that we need to realize is it's a pattern of looking outside of yourself. So, you know, so much of what I'm teaching you is about looking within yourself, getting your clarity and your guidance and your steps and your wisdom from within. You know that you're in comparison when you experience comparison, you're currently looking outside of yourself. You're looking outside yourself to other people, particularly other people, or to just circumstances outside of you, and comparing yourself to that. And what happens with comparison is we either minimize ourselves or lift ourselves up in comparison to something. So whatever it is you're comparing yourself to, you will either come out less than. So you'll say, this thing is better than me and I am less than it. I am not as good as it. Or sometimes it'll be the opposite. Your ego will kick in a bit and you'll be like, that thing, I'm better than that. I'm way better than that. I mean, look at me, right? Sometimes that plays out too. We both have those two sides. But it's all coming from a space fundamentally of insecurity and fear. And it's comparing ourselves to things externally to help us measure within ourselves our value and our worth, which is not how we want to measure our value and worth, is it? But I'm just sharing all of this because it just helps illuminate the pattern a little bit when we talk about it. So one of the most important cures for comparison, if you're ever noticing it playing out, is you need to tune back in. So tune out what is going on around you and tune back into yourself. Because ultimately, everything you want to create and do, we want to be inspired and guided from within. And it is irrelevant when you are being guided from within, it is irrelevant what anyone else is doing. It's not about that at all. When you're really tuned in to fully honoring what is moving through you, your guidance, your ideas, your passions, your wisdom, what anyone else is doing is irrelevant. And so I always see when I'm caught up in comparison as a reminder to do something that reconnects me with me, that tunes me back into my heart and my body, gets me listening to my own inner guidance. That's the time to get off social media, to stop looking at the other person's website, to stop reading the other person's sales page, to stop, you know, looking at what they're doing, and to really come back to me and listen to myself again. I want to talk about something like more specifically, say around comparison, if there's one particular person, let's say, that's triggering you, because there's a really interesting thing we can explore around comparison that can help us understand, help us actually, sorry, gain a lot of learnings about ourselves from it. So anyone that triggers you, I want you to identify, and I ask you to do this in the workbook, I want you to think about someone who's really triggering you at the moment, someone that you would compare yourself to in some way, someone that is perhaps doing what you want to be doing, maybe doing it really well, maybe has what you want in some way, maybe has actually embodies and expresses some of the qualities that you really want to embody and express, but at the moment you don't believe you can. Whatever it is, we've all got someone that is triggering us. And I want you to start to see this person as a mirror for you, and as a mirror that can reflect back and show you some things about yourself and can help you learn about yourself and actually understand why they're triggering you. Because the reason comparison is so painful, and what actually comparison is when I look to this person, let's say it's a person, and I am envious of them because I believe they have something that I don't have. I believe they can achieve something that I can't achieve. I believe they have qualities that I don't have, and they're things that I want. So they're actually secretly things that I want in my own way, and I see them in that person. And this whole thing feels so painful because in that moment I see it in them and I admire it in them, but I don't believe that I have it or have that ability. And so in that moment, it's a real disowning of just how valuable and magnificent we are and thinking that someone else is so much better than us. But I believe you can't see something in another that you don't on some level hold within yourself. And I believe the reason that person is triggering you so much is because they're showing you what you want for you, but in that moment you don't believe that you're capable of it. They're actually a mirror helping you see more clearly what it is you really want and what it is that you want to express in your own way. Some examples. So, you know, the things that trigger me the most in other people are one, their levels of success. So particularly people who say have written a book or who are getting big speaking opportunities, because deep in my heart, they're things that I really want. If I was to get really, really honest, I want to write a book and I want to be getting the big speaking opportunities, but I don't fully believe in this moment that I'm worthy of it and capable of it. And so I'm envious of that person because they believe they're worthy and capable, but I don't believe that I am. Another thing is when I see people who are very confident in sharing their message and that they never question themselves and they're just out there being expressive and being visible and sharing their message and shining their light, I often get very envious and I compare myself to them and I'm like, oh, they're so much more confident than me. They're so much more articulate. They're so much more visible. The way they shared that was so much better than how I would share it. But if I really owned it, it is helping me see is, oh, I want to be more confident. I want to be more visible. I want to have a bigger platform. I want to more fully own who I am. And I can actually say, thank you for showing that to me. Thank you for helping me realize that's what I want too, but in my own way. So every person that triggers you is a teacher, and you can actually say, thank you. Thank you for helping me realize that's what I want. Thank you for helping me see, yeah, I want to run my own business. I want to work for myself. I want to have a booked out coaching schedule. I want to have people buying my services. Yes, that's what I want. And so as soon as that person helps illuminate it, you've got to take your attention off them and say, thank you. Thank you. You've just shown me something I want for myself. Now I can let you go and let you go and do it in your own way and get back into focusing on how I'm going to do this for myself. So I just recently saw a girlfriend of mine, Melissa Ambrosini, just locked in a TED Talk. She's doing a TED Talk. I've got another girlfriend of mine, Jordana, who's published a book and is on to publishing her second book. And so rather than obsessing over what they're doing, which is very easy for me to do, I'll look at what they're doing and they're so successful. And I'm like, oh, thank you for showing me. Yes. Time to focus on how do I do more speaking? Time to focus on what is my book about? And let's start writing it. Now I can take my attention off you and just refocus on my dreams and goals and doing it in my own way. So that's how I've used comparison a lot as to see these people as teachers and to be grateful for what they're showing me. They're helping me see more clearly what I want for myself. And then I need to let them go, say, thank you. You can go on and do it your way and I'm going to go do it my way. So the issue with comparison is like, have you ever got into that place of obsessing over someone else and obsessing over someone's life and creations? And what you're doing in that moment is you're actually giving all your energy to them and you're abandoning yourself. You know, so I could sit here and I have done it with a few of my peers being like, oh my God, look how amazing they are and their website's so beautiful and look at that book and I could never write a book like that. And oh my God, I can't believe she got that speaking opportunity. I would never have the confidence to do that. There's no way. And so I'm giving her all of my creative energy, making her amazing, and I'm abandoning myself. So that's my reminder. No, 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 Connie, all of that admiration and love that you're giving to those people, you need to turn that onto yourself. You need to focus on why you are incredible and what you have to offer. I know I'm harping on about this, but this is something that I've just seen trip up so many people, this pattern of comparison. And you need to realize that just because someone else is doing it doesn't mean you can't do it in your own way. They're helping you see what it is you really want. So tune back into your inner guidance, listen for your inner calling, listen for your desire, ask for the unique way that you're going to do this. Give the same, all the love and admiration you're giving to that other person to yourself. You need it for you. And then tune out, you know, maybe get off social media, stop consuming their stuff. A lot of the people that have triggered me in my industry, I've muted them on Instagram, not because I don't love them, but because as soon as I see their content, it triggers me so much that it makes me, it shuts me down energetically. So I have muted their accounts. Some of them I've unfollowed so that I can engage in their content when I feel in a good place. And then if I'm not feeling in a good place, I don't have to see their stuff. So that's really helped me. And it's important for any of you as well, if you're in a process of creation of something that's important to you, that you start to reduce your consumption. Because you've got this container within you of space and energy. And you don't want to fill that container with everyone else's stuff, their ideas, their writings, their words, their offerings, their branding. You need to clear that out. So if you're feeling cluttered by everyone else's ways of doing things and ideas, reduce your consumption and create more space so that there's room for your own energy to be the dominant energy that you're feeling. Yeah? I hope that's useful. Sorry, I just like to turn this light back on and off just to get the... That didn't really do anything. There it is. This is me and my lighting issues. You'll get used to it. I'm so funny with stuff like this. I hope this is resonating. All right. So there's a whole section in the workbook for you to work through stuff around comparison that will, if that's playing out for you and if that's a big factor for you at the moment, there's a lot in the workbook that will really help you to work through that. Let's talk about perfectionism. This is another fear-driven pattern. So again, it's the energy of fear it's energy of fear that's driving it, because perfectionism doesn't come from an energy of love. So let's understand it and let's work through it a little bit more. So I actually feel like perfectionism, I think it's a pattern of control, and I think it's a pattern of control that protects us from feeling not good enough or from feeling potentially like a failure. Because think about it, right? If you can perfect something to the extent, you know, before you put it out, you've got it as perfect as possible, there's a lot less room or opportunity for it to be criticized, for it to be judged, for people to find faults in it. If you've got it as perfect as you possibly can, you have reduced the risk, minimized the risk of anyone finding anything wrong with it, of anyone having any reason to criticize it, to not like it, to reject it, and you've reduced the chances of you failing, right? So this is when we fundamentally behind an act of perfection, of being perfect, is usually a fear of not being perfect, of not being good enough, of failing, of being criticized, of not delivering something to a good enough standard that people will like it. And so we spend all this time, and look, I am a massive perfectionist. I completely relate to this, and it's been really interesting for me to unpack it. We spend all this time and energy, excessive time and energy, getting something perfect so that it can increase our chances of having it loved, approved of, validated, and acknowledged by others, and then we can feel like we're good enough. So it's actually something that I think keeps us safe. It allows us to be in control, and it allows us to prevent people seeing anything about us that's maybe imperfect or weak or flawed in some way, if we can always give off this perfect representation of ourselves. Like I said, I am owning this 100% as one of my patterns. It absolutely is. And I was thinking about this with my partner, actually, because he's a creative, and most creatives have perfectionism tendencies, and he has very high standards on his creativity. And I think he's phenomenal. Like, everything that he does, I'm like, wow, I think it's incredible. But he's so critical of his own work that he's not sharing it, because he feels like it's not good enough. He's even said that. He's like, I feel like this is a 6 out of 10. I don't even want to share it. And, you know, I was thinking about that with him, in that he would never admit it, because most, particularly men, but most of us are too proud to admit that what our fear is if we would put out something that was a 6 out of 10 in our eyes, that there's a lot of room in there for someone to criticize it and not like it, because we don't think it's that great. So we're pretty much opening ourselves up to be judged and to fail to some extent, to have something that's not good enough. So, you know, us as perfectionists, and I see this in my partner and he mirrors this back to me really, really well, nothing's ever good enough for us. Have you ever had that? Like, far out, that's my weakness. Nothing is ever good enough for me. And I never get to a point where I can feel like, you know what, Con, I'm really proud of that. My head's always like, you could have done better, could have changed that, could have done that differently, should have got a better result than that. Yeah, that was good, but oh, now I can see, you know, they could have done it better. And that's a big pattern that I'm really having to work through. So there's a few different ways that we can work through perfectionism. Shirley said, Shirley, I just saw your comment. Awesome content, really resonates. I'm so glad. Thank you for being here. Thank you. One of the things that I've begun to work through with perfectionism is letting, now this isn't just in my work, but learning how to let things be messy. And this might sound like a really strange thing, but you know, any creative process, and I actually think feminine energy in general is quite a messy energy. It can be chaotic, you know, creation and destruction and birth and death. It's all very messy. And, you know, you can imagine if you were, I've never had a baby myself, but I can imagine from what I know of childbirth, that if you tried to micromanage that and control that and get that be clean and perfect, no blood, no poop, no body fluids, everything run, you know, that's not possible. That's not what birth is. Birth is this crazy, chaotic, messy, wild experience, and it's meant to be. And so I've had to look at one of the ways I've been working through my perfectionism is to find any opportunity where I can practice letting things be messy. And this might sound like a silly example, but it's been big work for me. Is like, if I'm going to cook, I'm like, Connie, let it be messy. I throw crap everywhere. I let the whole kitchen be this place of like just creative chaos in the process of me cooking, and then I clean up afterwards. And I found so much freedom in giving myself these avenues to just let myself be completely messy. Even like with my partner, it's been big work for me to let myself be messy emotionally with him. You know, I even used to be very controlled in my emotions, very like, I'll only show particular parts of myself, and I'll control my tears and I'll control my anger, so it's all very tempered. Now I'm just kind of like, I'm like wild. I'm like, you will see snotty cries with like shit running down my face and like no makeup on, and I'm screaming like a wild woman. And I've had to find little places where I can practice letting my messiness come out and be expressed. Another place is just in creativity outside of my work, like painting. I've for ages was practicing real messy painting, where I would get a big drop sheet and I'd get a canvas and I'd just like throw paint like with my hands, and I get hands in there and like play music and be dancing around and just doing this wild ass painting. And it was these places where I could let myself break out of my rigid controlling perfectionist tendencies. Another thing is around the house. Sometimes I just let the house be messy, which for someone who has OCD like me is very difficult. But sometimes I'm like, just let it be messy, Con. And I just let everything just be messy for a while as part of me just feeling more comfortable in the mess. So if you are someone that does relate to my tendency to be that OCD controlling kind of person, you might find place, just begin playing around with and exploring this idea of letting things be messy. That's been big work for me. And then the other thing is, there's a lot of self-love work here around our perfectionism tendencies, because what perfectionists have set up is this idea that I'm only lovable when I'm perfect, and that things are only good enough when they're perfect, and that my weaknesses, my flaws, my imperfections aren't lovable, aren't desirable, aren't, they're not going to get me the acceptance and the praise that I want. So part of our working on this is learning to love and accept and make peace with all parts of ourselves, and allowing those parts of ourselves to be seen, which might mean sometimes you are putting a creative project out there before it's fully ready, just because you know you need to share it, even though it's not complete, for example, not complete to the standard you'd want it to be. And doing that, you might notice all this self-judgment around that was crap and this isn't good enough and you rushed that and, you know, you didn't really put in the effort you could have put in, and it's not as good as her that thing that she's created. But actually, like, letting that be okay. And rather than only being happy with it if it's perfect, you choose to be happy with it because in that moment, it's the best that you could do. In that moment, it's just an expression of you. And you consciously choose to say, you know what? I'm just proud of you for doing it. I love you and I'm proud of you for doing it. And that's my standard of whether or not it's good enough, just the fact that you did it. An example, let me give you an example of this. So doing Instagram lives are an outside comfort zone place for me. And I've recognized the reason I find Instagram Live so scary is because it's really hard for me to be perfect on there. You know, because you're pressing live, you're just like, suddenly you're live. And a lot of the times I'm like, I don't know what I want to talk about. And I don't know how it's going to come out. And maybe I'm going to look nervous and awkward. And is even anyone going to be there? And are people going to ask me questions? Am I just going to be talking to myself? Like, all this crap's going on. And so I feel very vulnerable because I'm like, I'm pressing live and I don't know if this is going to be perfect. I don't know if people are going to see my weaknesses. They're going to see that I'm nervous. They're going to see that I'm stuttering. They're going to see that I don't know what I'm talking about. They're going to see that no one cares what I'm talking about because no one's watching live, all this stuff, right? So for ages, my need to be perfect on an Instagram live stopped me doing them. So what I started doing, and I broke through this at the start of this year, actually, I did my first Instagram live and I've done a few of them since then, is I decided that my measure of whether or not it was good enough was not on, it was not based on whether or not it was perfect. It was based on simply the fact that I did it. So I was like, my, for me to be proud of myself is just simply that I was able to press live and do it. The purpose of it is not to be perfect. The purpose of it is just to do it. And I was so proud of myself for just doing it, even though sometimes I watched them back and I was like, gosh, Con, that was rubbish. But I was like, I don't care. That was such a big step for you. And I'm just so effing proud of you for doing it because it terrified you. And that's enough for me. And so sometimes we just have to be so proud of ourselves for simply doing the thing, regardless of whether it was perfect. And so that really has helped me pretty much with anything that really scares me, is to lower my standards to some extent. So to not to say, for me to be proud of you in this, you don't have to get it perfect. You just have to do it. And I'm going to love you so much for doing that. And if I see weaknesses in you in that, I'm just going to love them because I'm just so proud of you for even doing it. And then I'm going to extract the lessons and the learnings and we're going to get better next time. Yeah, that's how I was able to work through something where perfectionism really, really stopped me for a very long time. You know, and I also, I held the intention. I chose to make my intention to be real over being perfect, to be authentic over being perfect. And I think that can be a thing that can really help us around our own self-expression, because we get paralyzed around our self-expression when we think it has to be perfect. But if our intention isn't about perfection at all, it's just about being real, it's just about being authentic, it's just about allowing people to feel us, well, then that changes the whole game. Because I go on to Instagram Live now being like, I just want people to feel me. I just want people to see me and hear what I'm feeling in this moment. And that's my intention. And that's probably going to come out in a pretty messy way. And that's okay. Yeah, does that make sense? I'm thinking of, for some reason, Gabrielle is coming to mind a lot because I know she's a creative and an artist. And I'm sure you can probably relate to this. I mean, I haven't gone through the creative process to the extent of creating music and art that I'm putting out in the world. But, you know, most of us would know from hearing a good song, or I know from reading a good piece of writing, it's the emotion in there that touches me more than anything, not how perfect it was. So it's just about the energy you're putting into it. All right, so you can work through that in the workbook if perfectionism is a big thing. Look, and you might find some of these patterns that I'm putting in here, they're not big issues for you. Maybe comparison isn't a big issue. Maybe perfectionism isn't a big issue. If they're not massive issues for you, you can leave them. You don't have to fully dive into them. But I've got exercises around all of them so that if that particular pattern plays out, you have a chance to work through it in the workbook and unpack it a little bit. All right, the next one we're going to talk about is worrying what other people think about you. I know that this is a big pattern and tendency because I heard it through talking to many of you on discovery calls, heard that that this is something that plays out. Let me just have a little look at what I had here. Yeah, okay. So worrying what other people think, there's a few ways that we can work through this. Again, a fear-driven energy. Again, it's coming from fear because in that moment we're not feeling whole and good enough and worthy and safe and secure and loving of who we are. We are fearing in that moment that someone's going to take their love, someone's going to think negatively of us, someone's going to criticize us, someone's going to judge us, someone's going to reject us in some way. So we're in a state of fear when we're worrying and being concerned about what other people are thinking about us. And one of the places I always like to start with my clients around this is like, so often people are like, oh, I'm worried what people are thinking about me. And I always ask people, like, who are the people? What people? What people? Because we say it's people, but it's actually usually a few specific people. And the first step is to actually get really honest. Who are these people that I'm most concerned about their opinions? And there's usually a handful. And there might be a couple of categories. Usually it falls into family, partners, friends, and peers, usually. And there will be reasons for different reasons for each. So I actually want you to start off with really who are these people that you're most concerned about their opinions and why? What are you most concerned they're going to think about you? An example of this is I had a client the other day. She's a woman from my mastermind last round, and we had our coaching session together that she'd purchased. And, you know, her big fear and her big pattern is her husband, his lack of understanding of her spirituality. So she's got her spiritual work. She's really starting to step up, to set up. But she finds he thinks it's totally woo-woo. He's questioning and challenging everything that she's doing. He doesn't think it's a legitimate career. She finds when he's at home, she can't do her work. She's cancelled sessions when he's there because she's concerned about what he's going to think and what he's going to say. And actually, there's a deeper fear that her and I unpacked, which is that it's going to destroy their marriage, that it's going to create such a disconnect of him not understanding her, and she's terrified of losing him. So when you actually start to more specifically unpack it, it's helpful because then you can actually really work on what's actually going on. Because it's not that she's fundamentally worried what everyone's thinking about her. She's got this really deep core fear that if she reveals who she really is to her partner, that it's going to destroy their relationship because he won't understand it and he'll criticize her. But where I began working with her and where I would work with any of us who are going through this is where we've really got to look at our relationship with ourselves and how we are relating to ourselves, how we are, what we are thinking about ourselves and where we're holding judgments against ourselves. And I think I said this on one of the discovery calls, but I always use this as an example. It's like, let's say there was a part of you, part of your personality or your body that you were totally in love with and cool with, like really okay with. I don't know, let's say you have beautiful hair. Or for me even, I've got to a point where, say, you know, this work that I'm doing, being a life coach, I own this like 2,000,000,000%. No one could ever make me question the fact that I'm doing this work. I'm so in full ownership of that. Maybe you know you have beautiful eyes. Maybe you know you have a very kind heart. Just think about something that you're like, you would never question yourself on it because you feel so certain of it and owning of it. And imagine someone came along and tried to criticize that part of you. You know, you have awful hair. You have ugly eyes. You have a cold heart. Who are you to be a life coach? For example, let's say someone tried to criticize this thing that you are actually completely, totally okay with. You'd just be like, F off. Like, go away. You wouldn't care. You wouldn't internalize it. You wouldn't take it on because you have no issue around that part of yourself. Like if someone tried to tell me I didn't have nice eyes, I'd be like, you don't know what you're talking about. I know I have nice eyes. Or like if someone tried to, again, say, who are you kind of to be a life coach? I'm like, I know 100% without shadow of a doubt that this is the work I'm meant to be doing and that I'm awesome at it. So how about you just go away? However, if I had a weak spot, and we all have weak spots, if I have a spot that in myself I feel sensitive about, I doubt myself on, I judge myself on, I question myself on, we've all got those places. Let's say it was around my capacity to be a public speaker and whether or not, you know, maybe I still doubt a little bit in whether I could really be a big name public speaker like some of the people that I admire. Or maybe my breast size is a sensitive area for me, for example. I'm just making stuff up, but let's just say you've got an area that's a sensitive area that you personally doubt yourself on or judge yourself on. If someone came along and criticized that area, judged that area, illuminated that area to you, it would be really, really painful. Like if I secretly was holding this doubt, like I don't think I really have the capacity to be this type of speaker, and my partner came along and said to me, babe, you really don't have what it takes to be a speaker. Like I've gone and heard great speakers and, you know, I just don't think you can do it. Like you're really not that articulate and confident when you speak. Like if he said something like that, like that would fucking floor me. Or if he came to me and he said, I want you to get a boob job. I don't like your breast size. Oh, God. So the reason I'm giving these examples is because whatever we are most concerned about other people thinking about us, wherever we're fearing the judgment, the criticism, the lack of acceptance, it's showing us where there's work for us to do in ourselves in that area. And that's what I was saying to my client. I'm like, the fact that you're so, there's this huge wound around your husband not accepting your spirituality is a sign to me that you've still got work to do to fully own and step into this part of yourself. Because when you get to a point where you're so 100% okay with it, it doesn't matter what anyone else says. It doesn't matter if anyone else questions you on it. It doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. So any of those places where we're still worried is a sign for us to look, okay, where am I not in full acceptance and love of this part of myself? And what work do I have to do to come into full ownership of that? Most of us that are worried about being judged for doing our true work in the world is because we're still on a journey of really believing in ourselves and owning that this is what who we are and that we're worthy of it and we can do it. So again, like when I first wanted to get into life coaching when I was quite young and I didn't have any experience, if someone would ever question me on it, what do you mean life coaching? Are you old enough to be a life coach? Like, really? It would make me almost just want to give up. Now, like if anyone questions me, like it's just, you can't question me on this. I'm so solid and confident in it because I believe in myself so wholeheartedly. And so it's like other people's opinions just like wash off me. I'm like, whatever. So it's never about the other person. That might be part of it. But if you are worrying what other people think about you, I really want you to actually look look in. Where are you in judgment of these parts of yourself? Where are you not in full acceptance of these parts of yourself? Where are you still criticizing these parts of yourself? Where do you need to love and own and support these parts of yourself more? Because when you fully own them, other people will support you. I've also, I don't want to go on about this too much, but I have spoken about this before, that my big part of my personal journey was that my father never understood my career path and never really supported it. And he constantly questioned me. And we got to the point where one of my last conversations with him around this particular topic was only a few years ago when he said, he called me up one day and I'd been running my business for 4 or 5 years at that point. He called me up and he's like, Con, we need to have a meeting about your career. And I'm like, in what way? Well, I've been having a think and I think it's about time you got a job. And, you know, got some steady income coming in and I've been chatting to some friends and looking online and there's some great jobs out there. And I really think, you know, we should get you into a great job. I said, Dad, I have a job. I'm running my business. Yeah, but Con, you know, I just think it's time, you know, to get into something a little bit more secure and settle down and, you know, just, and I, in my younger years, would internalize that as Dad doesn't believe in me. Dad doesn't support me. That was my story. That's what I would make. So seeing him act like that, I would make it mean, Dad doesn't believe in me. Dad doesn't support me. And it was a real wound for me for a long time. I eventually got to the point where I'm like, do you know what? This actually means nothing about me. And it doesn't actually mean that he doesn't believe me or support me. All it means is he has a model of the world, a way of looking at the world, where in his mind, security equals a day job. Security equals a job that makes sense. And for him to feel like he is successful as a father, he wants to see that his daughter is secure and safe and on track in life. And I really came to realize this was all about him. It was all about him trying to get me to be a certain way that would make him feel like he was a success as a father and like his daughter was taken care of. Then it cracked my heart open and I no longer got so hurt and angry, and I instead opened up my heart and understood where he was coming from. And so I just said to him on the phone, I said, Dad, wow, thank you so much for putting in so much effort to look into jobs for me. I so appreciate that, you know, you really care about my career and that this is, you know, you're putting in so much effort to help me. I'm like, I need you to know I really appreciate that. So thank you. I said, and I completely respect and understand what you're saying. I said, but what I need you to know is that running this business is my dream and I'm never giving up on my dream. And I need you to know that. I need you to know that this is my dream and I'm never, ever going to give up on my dream. And he was just silent because what do you say to that? And he never brought it up again. because I didn't speak to him from a place of defensiveness and attack and wounding. I stood in my power and spoke with my heart wide open. I said, Dad, this is what I need from you. I need your support. I need you to understand how much this means to me. And so it's so important that if we are communicating with people in our lives who we feel don't support us, that we do our inner work first to work through whatever our wounding is, our story is. They don't believe in me. They don't support me. They don't think I'm capable. They don't think I've got what it takes. I actually don't think that's the truth. Usually it's that you've triggered something in them that's scaring them, that's concerning them, that you're acting in a way that is different to what they expect or understand about life. So you need to have compassion and don't try to change them. Don't try to get them to believe in you right away. Don't try to get them to be your number one fan right away. It might take them some time. Just keep speaking from your heart about why this is important to you, why you want it, and what you need from them. Just to say, this is something that's so important to me and I would really love your support. I know you may not understand. I know this might be hard for you, but it would mean so much to me if you would just support me with this. And people will feel that. And if they love you, they will listen. So I really wanted to share that story. Thank you, Shirley. I'm glad that that story resonated with you. It was a really, really defining moment for me. And it's something that I've, you know, my partner is so, so supportive of my work. He doesn't fully get it. Like the other day I was like, oh, babe, I've got to get up because my spirit guides are talking to me and I need to go talk to them. He's like, oh, okay, don't know anything about spirit guides, but he just lets me do it. And if he ever questioned me on it, I'd say, look, you don't need to understand what this all is, but I just need you to understand it's who I am and what's important to me. And I'd love your support. I'd just love you to let me do it. So, yeah. Let me just fix this lighting a little bit. That's a way to work through the whole concern of what people will think about us. And I hope that's been supportive for you. Okay, final little component is on self-doubt. We talked about self-doubt a bit in the last class when we were talking about sort of building belief, and self-doubt is very much, you know, working through this, it's so important that we're working on trust. Trust in ourselves, trust in our feelings and our inner guidance and our inner calling, even if we don't have any proof or evidence just yet. We have to trust what we feel. We have to trust what we know within. So like I said in the last class, one way that we can find certainty and belief in something is to look for proof and evidence outside of ourselves that it's possible. That can work, but that can leave you needing to wait until you see proof and evidence before you can do anything. The other way we build belief is just through getting in the game, taking a risk, taking the steps and building the belief along the way. Most of what I think I said this, like pretty much everything I do, I build my belief along the way. I build my belief along the way, particularly when it's something brand new I've never done before. You build your belief along the way, but you just got to start, and you start trusting the feeling that's there. And then you take the step and you get a little bit of evidence to prove to you, oh, that worked out. That was okay. People kind of liked what I shared. Everything didn't fall apart. Okay, cool. Gives me a little bit more confidence to take the next step then. Take the next step, get a little bit more proof and evidence. Oh, look, some money came in. Oh, look, an opportunity came in. Oh, look, that person said that they loved what I did. Oh, cool. There's a bit more confidence you get to build. And your belief just builds and builds through taking the steps. So really important that we don't necessarily wait to believe in something with 100% certainty or have all this proof and evidence that it's possible before we take a step. We sort of have to, it's a little bit of fake it till you make it. You sort of have to work on practicing believing in yourself first, and then through that inner belief, you'll manifest things outside of you that will give you even more certainty about what you're doing. But you know, this is a journey of choosing to be your own inner cheerleader. You know, it's like, again, I'm using my partner as examples, but there's a few things he's wanting to do in his business that he's never done before. and I don't have any proof or evidence that it's possible for him. And that's not what I'm basing my belief in him on. I believe in him 100% because I love him. And from my heart, I'm like, I believe that you are capable of anything you put your mind to. That's the type of love and devotion we need for ourselves. Like if I kept saying to him, give me proof. What do you mean you want to start up this business? Have you ever done anything like this before? Do you have any evidence to prove that you can do it? There's heaps of people out there already doing this. What makes you think you're going to be any different? If I spoke to him like that, he would feel so unsupported by me. And that's how we're often speaking to ourselves. So think about how you would support someone that you really love who wanted to take a risk and follow their heart and do something new. How would you speak to them? How would you encourage them? How would you support them? Then you need to give that type of love and support to yourself. That's what you deserve from yourself. Unconditional love and support. Yeah? Just because you want it. And because you want it, you are worthy of receiving it. And you love yourself enough to support yourself to have it. The final piece I just want to touch on here is, you know, really what the fundamental fear is for most humans. I mean, there's sort of a couple of fundamental fears, but we all hold the fear of not being good enough and the fear of not being loved. They're two very real fundamental human fears. And I think what I've come to realize is being human is just, that's part of the game. It's part of the game that as you move through your life, you'll probably continue to bump up against the fear of not being good enough and the fear of not being loved. And it's that, you know, this is stuff that gets really programmed into us as children when, you know, we get the feedback that love is conditional and I love you when you do this and I don't love you when you do that. You're a good girl when you do this and then you're a bad girl when you do that. And, you know, we get this whole conditioned version of love, which stays with us for our whole life. And, you know, I think we all fundamentally fear not being good enough and then losing love as a result. So if any of that ever plays out for you, again, it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you and it doesn't mean that you're weak or flawed in any way. It's just part of the human condition. And we just have to learn how to love ourselves more and more and more. And when it comes to not being good enough, you know, I think good enough is just a perception. How do we actually measure good enough? How do we actually ever know what good enough is or if we are good enough? It's such a difficult thing to quantify, yet it's something that so many of us are ruled by. When we really peel it back, a lot of our wounding is around not being good enough. And what I want to say to you is you get to decide what good enough is. You actually get to set that standard. And you get to set that standard at a place where you set yourself up for success rather than failure. Because what most of us do, and this ties back into talking about perfectionism, we set the standard so high. I'll love you when you go to the gym 5 days a week. I'll love you when you hit that financial target. I love you when you quit your day job. I'll love you when you have that, you know, award-winning song. I'll love you when you write your book. And the standard's so high that we're withholding that love from ourselves until we meet this unrealistic standard. And then we go, oh, then I'll love you. How about we set the standards to the extent where we can set ourselves up for success and set ourselves up to win and set ourselves up to be loved no matter what? So like I said, when I changed the standard around an Instagram live, the standard going from this is going to be a perfect Instagram live similar to the way these other people do it, and I changed the standard to be no, for this to be good enough, it's just got to get done. You just got to be on there. How much easier it is for me to experience success when my standard's here. Now, that isn't like just lowering your standard. That is actually setting a realistic standard so that you can achieve it and you can feel proud of yourself. So that's just a big thing I notice with sort of, this high achieving population of people that I tend to work with a lot, is we're setting ourselves up to feel not good enough so much of the time based on these unrealistic standards that we place. So whatever it is you're wanting to move forward on, really look at whatever standard you've got there that would measure whether it was good enough or successful or done well or well-received, whatever, and change that so that you can experience success and be proud of yourself and give yourself love for what you've done. Like I know for a lot of you doing the August videos, and I've sort of seen it in the way you're approaching the videos, your standard for being proud of yourself doing that video is not to have the best video out there. I can see it with all of you. You're like, I'm just going to be proud of myself for getting on here. I'm just going to be proud of myself for pressing publish on this video. And because of that, you are celebrating yourself through that tiny step and feeling proud of yourself for taking a small step, which is just sharing a video. But because none of you are like, oh, it has to be perfect for me to be proud of you, you've got this beautiful freedom now just to keep moving forward. And that's what, you know, this love that we can offer ourselves. It gives us the freedom to keep moving forward without ever feeling like we have to worry about failing and not being good enough and being messy and being imperfect, because we're committed to loving ourselves through it all. And we say, just the fact that you gave it a go, beautiful, I love you for that. And that's enough. And I'm proud of you. So we need to have that relationship with ourselves. So this has been a big riff on obviously fear-based energy and all the ways that fear-based energy can play out. And my biggest thing I just want to give you from this class is just to be changing your relationship to that fear. Again, not seeing that as anything going wrong, but seeing as a beautiful indication that you're growing and expanding, you're taking a risk, you're stepping outside your comfort zone, and you need to have your own back and love and support yourself through that, because it's a vulnerable feeling. And it will activate all your fears and concerns of failure and other people's perceptions of you, all of that. But as long as you love and support yourself through it, you'll be fine. And as long as you see that fear is just a real indication of your courage and how strong you are and how brave you are, then you'll be fine. And it's just when the fear arises, I think I'd said in the last masterclass, I rewatched a bit of it, and I think I said to you my three-step process was stop, witness, choose again. It's actually catch, witness, choose again. Catch, witness, choose again is my three-step process. I meant to say it like that. I think I said it the wrong way the other day. So catch, witness, choose again. So just when fear arises, pause, notice it, take a breath into it, and witness it. And just identify, okay, what's the fear that's getting triggered for me at the moment? What am I really afraid of here? And how can I love and support myself through this? What do I need from myself to support myself through this fear today so that I can keep moving forward from a place of love? Yeah. All right. I hope that's been supportive. Let me see. What have I got for you in homework? So with homework, if you are someone that is consuming a lot of other people's content and creations at the moment, you might want to look at reducing that to give you more space to focus your energy on yourself, to nurture your own creative ideas, your own talents, your own gifts, if comparison is playing out for you. I also recommend some mirror work here, and mirror work is so beautiful for healing our relationship with ourselves. So actually to spend time sitting down, looking in your own eyes and saying the things to yourself that you most need to hear. I'm proud of you. I love you. I'm so proud of your courage for just like giving this a go, and look at you. You're following your heart. You're listening to yourself. That is so beautiful. This is something that not many people ever do. And I'm so proud of you for doing this. Speaking to yourself the way that you would speak to someone who you deeply care about, and thinking about what you really need to hear from yourself, and looking in your own eyes and saying it to yourself. Sometimes I even just, you know, if I've been beating up on myself, I'll just sit down and be like, oh, Connie, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for speaking to you like this. I'm so sorry for not believing in you. I'm sorry for criticizing you. I love you. I'm so sorry that I spoke to you in that way. And I'm really committed to learning how to love you instead. You might practice affirmations. There's a lot of different things you can do with mirror work that's very healing. And then my final thing here is, if perfectionism is playing out for you, it may not be, but if it is, you might like to work with some of this idea of embracing messiness, letting things be messy and playing around with the idea of messiness. You know, if you're someone that wouldn't ever let yourself cry to a friend, or, you know, this is a really weird thing with me, but like, I don't want anyone to ever come over to my house when it's messy. If someone's going to come over, I have to make sure everything's clean and perfect and amazing. So, you know, sometimes for me, it's like the house is a mess. you can still come over, you know. There's these little things that even sometimes for me, it's like letting myself go down the street without my hair and makeup done because I'm a little bit, you know, I like to look pretty. Just like, yeah, you know, or revealing your true thoughts and emotions to someone, making yourself vulnerable is a way to practice that sort of messiness. Dancing like crazy, being creative, if that's an area of work for you, the perfectionism thing, I want you to play around with the idea of being messy. Maybe even just writing a big stream of consciousness like, oh, here's my feelings from my heart, and then posting it on Facebook. I don't know. Something that allows you to just break out of that need to have things perfect. All right. Shirley says, thank you for a wonderful session. Really enjoying the work, feeling inspired and motivated. Thank you, Shirley. Thank you for being here. Totally respect and understand that not everyone can be here live, which is fine. You have 2 weeks to work through the class, so don't stress too much if you're ever not able to be here live. I'm quite happy just sitting here talking to myself or to Shirley most of the time. So you can, yeah, work through this at your own pace. If you haven't done your August video yet, please come on and do it this week. I'm loving just hearing where you're at and what you're focusing on this month. It only has to be a couple of minutes long. It doesn't have to be full in depth. Just give us a little snapshot of where you're at and what you're focusing on through August so that we can support you with it. And I'm going to post in the group today the details of our first group coaching call as well, as that will happen this weekend. And then I'll get them all scheduled in. Thank you for your patience with that while I just am adjusting to everything since being back. All right, my loves, I hope you've enjoyed this class. I hope this really supports you if you bump up against any fear or blocks on your journey. I look forward to hearing your experiences of it in our Facebook group. Please come in and let me know how you find it. Yeah, sending you all lots of love, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.